The Last Word with Matt Cooper on Today FM.
It's telly time. It's not Wednesday afternoon. We have moved our weekly television spot to Fridays. We have Culture Club now on a Wednesday. If you missed it on Wednesday, Paul Howard, the man behind the Ross O'Carroll Kelly books and the Copperface Jacks musical, was our first guest, talking about his favourite television, movies, books, theatre, music. Great chat with him, and we'll have lots of great guests in the coming Wednesdays on our Culture Club. But now let's talk television with Jennifer Gannon and Daniel Cal. But to start, I'm going to play a little clip from one of my all-time favourite TV shows, The Larry Sanders Show. Gary Shandling, the star of that, died a few years ago, and now Rip Torn, who played Artie, who we're going to hear now, unfortunately he died this week.
Don't you want anything to drink? A Coke, a diet soda, fizzy water?
No, thanks.
How about a shot of Maker's Mark? Paula, I think you should know I was about to give you a swift kick in the antifey. But that's not going to happen, because I know about the lump in your bosom.
Are you serious? I can't believe she told you.
Beverly was trying to protect you.
Okay, well, you know, I'm not really comfortable discussing my bosom with you.
Oh, sit down. I'm not done. I know what you've been going through, because about 20 years ago, I found a lump on one of my testicles.
I'm sorry.
Oh, I freaked out real bad. I was doing a Bob Hope special at the time, and I was so screwed up I let it affect my work. I made Elka Summer cry in the middle of a dance rehearsal. I'm not proud of that. And Bob, I told him about the lump the day before we taped. The monologue died. Bob's timing went all to shit, and you know why? Because he was thinking about my left nut. Paul, I learned from my mistake.
Paula played by the great Gillian Garofalo in that as well. Jennifer Gannon, Artie was just this fantastic character that Rip Torn played, because he literally kissed Larry Sanders' ass all the time.
Yeah.
He was with a big smile telling him he was wonderful, and then was absolutely cruel to everybody else.
He's just great at playing those kind of characters that are like the old establishment in the entertainment industry. Like if you look also at 30 Rock, and he won an Emmy for just best guest appearance as Don Geis, who was the head of the fake kind of GE. And obviously he did that so well. There was something about the way his delivery was, you know, and it's very authoritarian tones, but he could literally say anything. He was really sardonic, really dry. He almost reminds me of, like, it's like he never aged, because when you look back at, you know, I was just going through everything that he has been in, and it's like everything. He was in Men in Black, Airplane 2, and it was like he never aged. And I couldn't believe he was actually 88, because he seemed like timeless. And he's part of that tradition where, you know, someone like Lorne Michaels, who's the head of Saturday Night Live, it's like they're ingrained in American comic history, the two of them, I think, together. That it's really hard to imagine it without him. He's kind of like the acting version of, like, let's say, George Carlin, in a way that you just think of him when you think of some amazing sitcoms.
Daniel Cal, are you familiar with him?
I was in his kind of later work. He was in 30 Rock. He was in about 7 episodes of that as Don Geis. And he was, as Jennifer said, the CEO of General Electric. And he was a mentor to Alec Baldwin. And he was kind of a very different character than what we've just heard there. But I was looking back through Larry Sanders, and I thought I hadn't actually seen it, because I was...
You're too young, Daniel. It's over 20 years ago.
I think I was about 10 when that came out. But I was watching it and reading about it today, and obviously it was a sort of a...
Larry Sanders is one of the greatest TV shows ever made.
But it obviously set the way for the other shows like 30 Rock, like The Office, even Veep and things like that.
Yeah.
It had that feel of it, the tick of it and all those kind of things. The kind of behind the scenes, and
it was the trailblazer,
the subtle kind of subtle acting, rather than the sitcom kind of canned laughter type thing.
Okay, let's move on. And a lot of people are raving about Stranger Things, which is back on Netflix for season 3. Spoiler alert: if you haven't seen all of season 1 or season 2, you had plenty of time to do so. So let's have a clip from the first episode of season 3.
I call it the Forever Clock. Right, powered by wind, very useful in the apocalypse. Then I give you the slammer. Pretty neat, huh? But this is my masterpiece. I would like you to meet Cerebro. What exactly are we looking at here?
An unassembled, one-of-a-kind, battery-powered radio tower.
So, it's a ham radio.
The Cadillac of ham radios. This baby carries a crystal-clear connection over vast distances. I'm talking North Pole to South. I can talk to my girlfriend whenever and wherever I choose.
Girlfriend? Wait, so her name is Susie?
Susie with a Z. She's from Utah.
Girls go to science camp?
Susie does. She's a genius.
Is she cute?
Think Phoebe Cates, only hotter.
What's going on?
I want to talk to Dustin's girlfriend.
Girlfriend?
Okay, is there a third series in Stranger Things, Jennifer? Yeah.
Now, the second series, I think it kind of lost its way, but it was... Second series was a bit dark, but it also took... I think it's the key of anything like soaps or anything like that. If you take EastEnders out of Albert Square, it falls apart. And if you take Stranger Things out of the fictional town of Hawkins, it falls apart. And they made that mistake in the second season.
You better explain for people who haven't seen Stranger Things, and this might be difficult to do, what's it all about?
So basically, like Stranger Things, the Duffer brothers who created it, they're obsessed, they're geeks and totally obsessed with sci-fi and totally obsessed with the 1980s end of things. So basically, it's kind of a mix between all of the Goonies, It, Stand By Me, all those great 80s kind of young people in peril stories, but also with that kind of, there was a lot of, you know, in the 80s, there was a lot of turbulence in the way of, you know, the way children go missing. You had like the milk, you know, bottle, the milk box kids, milk carton kids like Johnny Gosh going missing. You had all these rumours about MK Ultra doing experiments on children in the Project Monarch. And it's very influenced by all of that. And so it's about a town that is infected with all this kind of weird macabre stuff going on that the kids find out about. And it's about, you know, trying to make the adults understand or also trying to protect the children from what the adults want to actually do on them, which is like this thing about innocence being destroyed. And I think because they grew up in the 80s as well, obviously, the Duffer brothers, they have this investment in it about how these things that happened to kids back then are only now being kind of coming out now in recent times. I think that's a really interesting
And what you've seen in the third thing. Series, is it doing better at getting
Much
back to the
better.
What appealed to everyone in
it's
the first
series?
It's
got a tight storyline, and it's about it really gets back into the action with bringing the gang together and the gang versus the big bad evil, which is now kind of, because it's set in 1985, it's focused on the Cold War, Russia, and there's a lot of Russian dealings in Hawkins, meddling in Hawkins and trying to harness the darkness that's there. And it's, you know, your typical good versus evil Dungeons and Dragons kind of TV show, which is really enjoyable.
You haven't gone for it yet, Daniel?
I watched a couple episodes of the first season. It wouldn't be my kind of thing at all, really. But I could see...
Yeah, a listener here says Stranger Things ran out of ideas after four episodes. That's sort
yeah,
of
and
what
I've
I felt
to a few
about
people
it as
in
well.
The office today who said they gave up after the first season.
Yeah, I gave up not even finishing the first season of it. So, but it is very popular apparently now, isn't it?
It is. And this is one of these Netflix things. They're very secretive about their ratings unless it's like a runaway success according to them. So they're
According to them, because these are not independently audited figures.
No. So it's their own. So they're saying that 18.2 million people watched the whole series in one sitting and that 40 million people watched at least one episode over 4 days. Now, the other things that they've been very vocal about is like Bird Box, which is Tripe.
Oh, rubbish.
And Murder Mystery with Jennifer Aniston.
Which is the worst.
They're saying that that's the most watched movie they had.
But isn't that worrying that they could find that the stuff that gets them the biggest views on Netflix could be absolute rubbish.
But it's about optics. The optics are about figures. It's not about critique. It's not about who enjoyed it. 31 million people could have watched Murder Mystery and like 90% of them probably just went, that was a load of crap. But that's not what you're hearing. That's not what you're hearing from Netflix. It's the massaging of, like, as in all that matters is the figures. What doesn't matter is criticism. And that's what they're moving away from. And that's what's really, you know, scary, because all of these things are critic proof. They're not critic proof, but they are in a way, because it is just becoming a numbers game. And that's what's really worrying.
So Jennifer Gannon and Daniel Cahill are now going to discuss the most pressing question of the week. Will Maura Higgins quit Love Island after last night's recoupling?
Short answer, no. I mean, she's no dummy. And there's already been rumblings about the fact that her and Curtis, this whole relationship is being manufactured by the show's producers.
Absolutely. It does not look real. She couldn't have a million years have picked him as being the fella she'd fancied. Clearly, it's part of her contractual obligations. This woman looks to me like she's a brilliant actor sent in to do a job.
Yeah, she's there to spice up what has been a pretty strange year in Love Island. And they want her to have some fiery love triangle with Curtis and the girl that he picked, Francesca, who's only new in the villa, because there's only a couple of weeks left. Just to remind people, Love Island will end on Monday, July 29th. So just for everybody, don't panic. It's not going to go on indefinitely. But I just think, you know, it's a very unlikely pairing because someone like Curtis is very Blue Peter. He reminds me of like that actor Michael Sheen playing a character. And I just can't see them being together. And that's why they want this source of dramatics between this unlikely pairing, which everybody can see through at this stage.
Daniel, it does seem so contrived and so scripted. And also, have to be said, from the bits and pieces that I've been forced to watch of it, quite boring.
So, in the interest of research, I watched some of it today because I don't watch it. It's terrible.
You're not the only member of our production team who doesn't.
And that's it. And actually, I would nearly say our office because it's epidemic. But I watched a few of it and she speaks in perfect sound bites.
Yeah.
She's like TV, I've never seen her before. She just come out of nowhere. She's TV gold. And I do suspect that she is a plant and that she's been told to crack on, is that what they say? Crack on with Curtis. Because he's got as much charisma as a napkin. So I don't see...
How we put it? He doesn't seem to be her type.
Yeah. I'm not sure what her type is.
Well, I mean...
Pulse.
I think with their... The way he is he seems less bullshy than she, and I think he's scared of her basically, and that's what everybody is saying. And the thing about it is, it's really interesting this year because we're drawn to a close now, and the only obvious pairings are Tommy and Molly. They're going to walk away with it. I call them the Frey Bentos of couples because they're so English, they're very UK, they're very Brexity, if for want of a better word. And I would like Amber and Ovi. Ovi is the only charismatic person in that whole place.
How can you care at this stage when it's clearly so scripted? Even the nonsense because the other night when Amy walked off the show, right?
Right. Okay.
Amy sits Curtis down for the most ridiculous conversation imaginable. Say, like, all I've ever wanted is for you to be happy. You know, I'm 4 weeks, love. Will you ever cop on?
That, you seem to know a lot about a program you don't watch.
When you know when the transfer figures are coming through and like Premiership footballers are being removed around like chess pieces and everyone goes insane, work shuts down, offices close down just to watch millionaires being swapped around on a board, you know pretty much what's going to happen, but it's obscene and the amount of money they're getting, you know, thrown around for is obscene. You know what this is going to happen, you know the way it's going to play out. It's exactly the same. It's a game. It's like Game of Thrones.
Maura is definitely going to be a millionaire at the end of this, I predict it right here right now. She'll be on Dancing with Stars, the Irish one.
Or I don't think they could afford her.
She might be on Celebs Go Dating because that's a offshoot for anybody coming out of Love Island. But I think it would be great. Ovi is the only man in it that has a personality. He remembered to pack his. So I would like them to win Amber and Ovi as friends, which would be a scandal.
This Love Island thing is spreading like a virus, isn't it?
It's like a summer STD that you cannot get rid of. Post-holiday.
Okay.
Very itchy.
Because there's an Australian one, isn't there?
There's a German one, which is explicit. And there's a US one.
Love Island coming out. And let's hear Cormac Murphy from Ennis on US Love Island.
I didn't know we were going to go on a date. I'm happy we're on a date because if I had to pick someone to go on a date,
it would have been you. Oh my god, that would be a cutie.
Okay, it would have been. So it's like, it worked out very well.
Are you happy with this date? Are you a little disappointed?
I'm happy you're wearing green. You're representing Ireland.
Yeah, yes. See, I thought it through. Mm-hmm. Thank you. Yeah, I wore like green that. For you.
Yeah, you look really nice, though, honestly.
You have really nice eyes, by the way.
Okay. Like, well, they're green. They're going to match your dress, so it works out well. But thank you.
You're welcome.
Let's cheers to America voting for us to be on our first date.
Yes, I feel flattered.
Hopefully not our last one.
Okay, so you like me. This is good.
Daniel Cahill looks like he's going to be ill here on the island.
I feel sick. That just sounds just as insipid as its UK counterpart.
At least they're funnier and cheekier in the UK one. This is painful.
Turn off the TV. There is other things to watch. There is so much good television at the moment. I think we're in the prime age of television. And this kind of crap, that's where all the funding goes to. And that's why documentaries aren't made anymore.
But it's cheap. It's cheap.
It's cheap
TV.
And it's rubbish. And, but boring it's cheap. People that's, with
it's
nothing
not where
to
the
say.
Funding goes. It's like, it's so cheap to make that, like, like that, they are printing money from it.
Vacuous people, and it celebrates ignorance. Like,
I mean, but
ignorance.
All reality,
it's getting the biggest
reality
numbers.
TV does.
On a number of nights in the last couple of weeks, Love Island on Virgin Media 2 at 9 o'clock in the evening has had bigger audiences than the news on RT1.
And that's depressing, isn't it? Like, the clip last week that went viral where the girls were quite proud that one of them just found out that Edinburgh was in Scotland.
Yeah, but look at Jade Goody. Remember when she was like...
Barcelona was in Italy.
Rome.
Yeah, but Jade
Rome,
Goody, you know, I mean, it's historic in reality TV for
but that's exploitative,
that kind
isn't it,
of
though?
Ignorance to be made out to be funny.
Well, actually,
and that's
the way, what has Channel 4 said now? If Jade Goody and Big Brother was around now, what would they do?
So they had they have an inquiry, kind of like an Oireachtas committee, the UK Parliament, into reality TV. So they had Alex Mahan, who is the chief executive of Channel 4. She has said that they would not have aired that racist row that happened in 2007.
Over OXO cubes.
OXO cubes.
Let's not forget, caused an international incident.
I remember I lived in New Zealand at the time, and it was like the 5 o'clock story on the New Zealand news that Jade Goody from Big Brother had made some offensive comments, and
they were burning effigies of her in India.
Gordon Brown
was talking about her in Parliament.
It was like big news in India as well, and it was going to affect Indian and UK relations, etc.
Okay, well, look, if you want to talk about good television, give us your recommendations of pick of the week. Daniel, what's your one?
My one is fantastic, and I only discovered it last week. So it's the Confession Tapes on Netflix. So it's the second series. The first series completely passed me by. I don't know where how it got lost in my recommendations, but it's there's so much true crime out there, and a lot of it is dross, but this is really good because it tells a story.
Is this drama or documentary?
Documentary. Tells the story quite concisely. A lot of these true crimes are spread out over 10 episodes, and they drag the arse out of it. So this one, they tell the story in one episode, and it really hones in on how cases are made and how the prosecutors interrogate their witnesses. So in a lot of these cases, they don't actually have any DNA evidence. It's all circumstantial. It's all about the confession. So all of these people have confessed to crimes.
Well, let's hear some from the first episode of Confession Tapes.
I need an ambulance.
Okay. What's the problem there?
There's been some kind of break-in.
Just calm down. What's the problem?
The two, my friend, his mom and dad, we think they're dead.
Just calm down.
I don't think it's safe here. We'll be outside.
Okay, go ahead and go outside.
Please, fast, okay?
Yes, they're on the way.
Okay.
They're on the way.
We'll be outside.
Okay, go ahead.
Approximately 2:30 in the morning, I got a phone call. My boss asked me to respond to the Raffae residence, which was in the Somerset area of Bellevue. They had just moved in, so there was a lot of boxes. In the family room downstairs, we found Mrs. Raffae face down on the ground. She had blunt force trauma to the head.
So this is, this is the first episode of the first series, so it's the son, the son's friend on the phone. They were at the cinema, they came home, they found the young fella's parents and his sister murdered, bludgeoned to death.
Don't tell us who did it.
No, I won't tell you. But the whole thing is, basically, the confession tapes is they confessed. But it really goes into, they have experts on false confessions about these 11-hour interrogations, this coercion. These two were stung in a operation that's illegal in Canada, but they use it, in the US, but they use it in Canada, called the Mr. Big. So what they do is they kind of get an undercover cop to act as some sort of big kind of gangster. He kind of ingratiates himself with the guys, and he's like, I need to know what you've done. Like, and the guys are trying to, maybe they get, they kind
that
of...
That seems like entrapment.
Yeah. And that's the only evidence they had for those dudes. And they're still in prison. So it's like such a good series.
All right. Jennifer, what's your pick of the week?
Mine is, we were talking about it last week, Louis Theroux, Surviving America's Most Hated Family. It's on BBC Two this Sunday at 9 o'clock. So it's when he's revisiting the Westboro Baptist Church. And it's more kind of, like, this is his third time revisiting them. And this is more focusing on the actual the kids that have gotten away, the members of the church that have left. Pastor Phelps, who was the head of the church, he's died. And it's about how maybe the church is breaking away a bit and it's not as strong as it was. And his granddaughter, Megan, is now one of the Westboro's most vocal critics.
Let's hear the trailer.
Three children have left since I last saw you.
Yeah.
You know I've been in touch with Megan. If she came back and wished to sit down with you...
To what end?
For a mother and daughter to...
Look, and Megan left because Megan doesn't believe these things. So there's nothing to talk about.
Louisa Rue, surviving America's most hated family on BBC Two.
Okay, that's your recommendation, Jennifer Gannon. Thank you, and Daniel Cahill as well.
The Last Word with Matt Cooper on Today FM.